All right. King of the Ring 94 returned to the Northeast in Baltimore, Maryland, June 94. Let's take a look at the tournament here. Some interesting choices here and there, and some good choices, too. We have Razor Ramon beating Bam Bam Bigelow to advance in the quarterfinals. Erwin R. Scheister beats Mabel, the M to the A to the B-E-L. You better not look past Mabel to Razor Ramon. Owen Hart beats Tatanka to advance, and the 1-2-3 Kid beats Jeff Jarrett. So those are your eight tournament entrants. Dusty, what do you think of that? And actually, let me just run through the rest of the card, too, because Diesel, the was he the Intercontinental Champ? Yes, he was at the time.
Yep.
Beats Bret Hart by disqualification in a world title match. Let's see. Of course, we have a tag team match, the Head Shrinkers against Crush and Yokozuna, an interesting kind of throw-together team. And two people I certainly would not have included, well, Waller maybe, but I wouldn't have included Roddy Piper in the King of the Ring tournament, so they don't count. So I guess looking over the WWF roster at the time, were these eight guys the right choices?
I can
see. It's kind of a weird question to ask, I guess. But
yeah, no, I was going to say this was right around the time where they were starting to push Diesel really big.
Mm-hmm.
But, maybe it was, it certainly wouldn't have been good matches if he just won three times and won the tournament.
Right.
And he was the Intercontinental Champion at the time, and that was another thing like you guys talked about before, you know, where they wanted to keep the champions out of the tournament, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Crush could have been in it instead of somebody, but, you know, whatever.
And it may have been an instance where he lost a... Did he lose a qualifying match?
He lost, yes.
Yeah,
I believe
he
did.
It's
Tatanka.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Tatanka, yeah.
And they were short on tag teams at the time. I mean, this
right.
definitely wasn't the heyday of, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. I can see why they had to throw together two guys who happened to be managed by Fuji to wrestle the
sure.
Head Shrinkers.
Overall, pretty good choices. Quality-wise, not as good as the Bret winning one, but they did enough booking-wise to make it work, I think.
Sure. The only person I'd say is, I mean, they have Shawn Michaels seconding Diesel.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess they didn't want him to lose. I mean, why, you know, he could have been in there, I mean, to improve the match quality, if nothing else.
This
was
a weird
time,
year for... I was going to say, this is a weird year for Shawn Michaels, 94. He loses the Intercontinental title. Well, he loses the ladder match at WrestleMania 10, so he's out of the Intercontinental title picture. His bodyguard, Diesel, wins the Intercontinental title from Razor Ramon, who won the ladder match. I'm pretty sure it was just the following set of tapings for Superstars that did air a few weeks later. They do the weird tag team title thing, including a title switch. Shawn and Diesel win the belts the night before SummerSlam at a house show. They may have defended the belts on TV. I'm sure they had to have and lost the belts. Actually, they didn't even lose the belt at Survivor Series. The 94, the night Shawn Michaels didn't even tag into the 5-on-5 match. I think he was injured. I think his forearm might have been injured in some way.
Yep.
He and Diesel just threw down the belt and gave them up. 94 was a strange year for Michaels, so there's probably more reason than we understand that they didn't put him in the tournament.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, he didn't wrestle a lot that year. Like, from 93 to 94, Survivor Series to Survivor Series, he didn't wrestle a lot. And I have a feeling it was probably a combination of injuries and drugs that led to that. So,
and the fact that, I mean, they're trying to build up a star, so yeah, you're right. They probably don't want him to lose much on television.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would imagine injury. Yeah, drugs, certainly, because he's obviously on drugs and he talks about it. But, yeah, I can see the injuries piling up, too, and it might have been sort of like a working vacation type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to they take Undertaker completely off the road. You know, they keep Shawn Michaels on TV so we don't forget about him, but don't make him wrestle.
Yeah.
And you help get Diesel over.
As best he could get over, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you guys, you know, and this, of course, there's been all this criticism, you know, particularly Shane Douglas and these guys that were very critical of the clique and didn't lose the tag team titles, for example. They're the one guy that, and we brought this up before, and I think Dusty would agree, that I thought probably had the biggest complaint about being under push during that time was probably Bam Bam Bigelow. I always thought he had a little more talent than WWF really showed with him. But
sure,
he really could put on some pretty good matches, I thought, and never really got a big push at this
was
time.
Was never allowed to reach his full potential. By the time Heyman pushed him as the ECW champion, his peak was over.
Yep.
You know, it's just unfortunate.
And I need to say, I wonder if a part of it was, God, and this is a total self-fulfilling prophecy, and I know he dressed, you know, I guess I don't know exactly how he dressed as a rookie, but when WWE suits you up in a full-body suit that looks like it has flames all over it,
yeah,
there's a pretty good chance you're not going to make it all the way up to the main event. And that's a shame. He could have potentially been a main event player. I mean, he could have been the Vader. You know, he didn't quite have that same mystique that Vader did.
Right.
But he was a huge, agile guy that looked like he would beat the shit out of you at the drop of a hat. So
well,
there's definitely
more
to be
that,
made out of him.
In 95, the plan was to push him huge because of the Lawrence Taylor match, but then they never did.
Yep.
I'm assuming that had something to do with the click, too.
That was always the claim.
Yeah,
I've heard Kevin Nash dispute that. He said that, you know, that was the one guy that we thought could go, but out of the people that bitched and whatnot. But it's like, well, he never, for whatever reason, he never, all his pushes seem to get cut off.
Yeah.
Strange.
Well, and let's see. Actually, it's funny. So Bam Bam Bigelow, Mabel are both in this tournament. Obviously, the point of this tournament is to make a challenger for Bret Hart and his world title. You didn't really have to go back too far in the annals of history. WrestleMania 10, Bret Hart lost to Owen Hart, his brother, in a fantastic opening match for a great card. And then fast forward a few months, we've got this intermediate pay-per-view, whatever you want to call it, King of the Ring. It's kind of a stepping stone for Owen Hart. We know we can go back and we can say, okay, Owen pinned the world champion once. He should get a title match. It just adds on to his heel heat, gives him something more to brag about, gives him that title, if you will, you know, the crown title, whatever.
King of Hearts promo. I mean, he gave some good promos during this time. I'd say some of the best he ever gave when he was the King of Hearts.
Yep, absolutely. So couple that with the fact that this was the small man era of the WWF. This was, you know, just after the steroid trial. Well, I think the trials actually were still technically going on at this point, but I think most of the mainstream media heat had died down by then. So you got smaller guys like Owen Hart, obviously wins, the 1-2-3 kid. Jeff Jarrett, wonder how he made it in there. His daddy wasn't booking or anything. I don't really know where I was going with that other than the fact that it just seems to be a smaller, more work rate-oriented tournament.
Yep.
Let's see. Anything else really worth talking about for 94, though? The atrocious main event between Roddy Piper and Jerry Lawler?
Terrible.
Not a good match. I mean, not, and I mean, not a good fit when I say not a good match. I mean, they didn't know they were going to have the big Lawler Brett thing the next year, but that's to me where more the money was. I don't know. Maybe they could have done without it.
Maybe. Unless they just, you know, business was bad. Roddy Piper was a hero, a star. Maybe they thought that putting him in a main event would be like a special attraction. Against Jerry Lawler was a poor choice. Honestly, two guys like that I think need to survive and live in alternate universes.
Yep.
Two guys who can talk a fucking blue streak and do it brilliantly. They brawl. They play to the last person in the audience. To me, it's a clash to put them together. It's kind of like you said, as a match, as a matchup, as a pairing. It's really strange.
Yeah, I probably sound like one of these bitter everything sucks or whatever. I understand putting them on the card because you do need some, you know, you have different people that are going to be drawn by different wrestlers, and these guys would appeal to a certain group and certain demographic, but to just match them up and put them in the main event, that's more than maybe they could have found a better fit. Put them in a tag team match against each other maybe with I don't know who, but
sure.
There might have been some better solutions there.
Dusty, we cannot talk about the King of the Ring 1994 without mentioning one man in particular.
Uh-oh.
Art Donovan.
Oh, fuck.
The clueless Art Donovan on commentary, former Baltimore Colt.
So well, and everything was so peaceful.
I know. Here's a guy they didn't. I don't recall them advertising him in advance.
No, I don't think so.
And if by not doing that, they're not as if he was going to draw any more buys for the pay-per-view as a commentator.
I don't see how he possibly could have. You know,
and if they're not advertising him in advance, he played on Baltimore's NFL team and they're in Baltimore. But if you don't advertise him, you're not going to pay. You're not going to sell more tickets. And anyway, he's on a goddamn headset. It's not like the people in the crowd can hear him. And thank God they couldn't. There are like 10,000 of the luckiest people in the world.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have to hear Art Donovan ask, "How much does this guy weigh?" every time somebody came to the ring.
This guy looks like a boxer. Oh, God.
Who's the guy in the white coat, Gorilla?
Is that the one I picked? That's the guy I picked.
That's Razor, right? Unbelievable. Dan, do I dare ask any other background on Art Donovan?
You told what I know, that he played football for the Colts. I could picture him. But no, I can't add anything there.
He was one of Johnny Carson's beloved guests in the 1980s on The Tonight Show because he would come to the show,
really?
And he would tell funny stories, but he was at an age at that point where he would ramble, but it wasn't like Grandpa Simpson rambling where you had to like cut the commercial in the middle of it, you know, type of thing. Like he was the controlled frenzy of the 1980s. And Johnny Carson was able to cut him off at just the right time. Here, he's just a babbling mess. He obviously did no homework. At one point, Gorilla and Randy Savage on commentary just start ignoring him.
Yep.
You almost feel bad for the old bastard.
I don't.
He probably got paid well.
I hope so.
He got
so.
Paid well, and he obviously didn't care, so fuck
yeah.
him.
Yeah. Show some respect.
Right, he definitely didn't care. Let's see, Dusty, overall card, thumbs up, down, in the middle?
I'd give it a thumbs up for the whole Owen thing, elevating him a little bit further into legitimate main event status. So,
Dan?
Yeah, mild thumbs up.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, mild a good term for it. It would not be the same show without Art Donovan, though. I go back to watch that show, not to see most of these guys work, because honestly, like, one of the matches that I really would have liked to have seen more of, Owen Hart versus 1-2-3 Kid, ended in 3.5 minutes. And I'm sure it was because they didn't want Owen to have to, you know, overextend himself, even though he was a fantastic wrestler who could have. Yeah, I really just go back to watch the show to listen to Art Donovan.
Really?
Yeah.
The first time I watched it, again, I had my friend Nick over, and we were watching it together, and, you know, when you're with people, you talk over everything, you know, you're watching, but you're talking yourself, and I actually didn't hear much of the commentary the first time around, and I liked the show much better that way than subsequent visits to the tape, so.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see, well, we can move on to 1995, then. The controversial King of the Ring tournament held in Philadelphia, of all towns. This was not the town, the home of ECW, the bloodthirsty Philadelphians. This was not the play. And this is like a WWF stronghold for a long, long time. It's Spectrum even, you know, everything. And Mabel became the King of the Ring.
Yeah.
I'll run down the tournament here again. Savio Vega, who qualified to be in the King of the Ring tournament earlier in the free-for-all, which is the 30-minute pregame show, beating IRS, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
He beat IRS to qualify that night, then turned around and beat Yokozuna via countout to advance. The Roadie, the Road Dog, Jesse James, BG James, Jesse James Armstrong, whatever you want to call him, beat Bob Holly in about 7.5 minutes. Shawn Michaels wrestled to a time limit draw against Kama, the Supreme Fighting Machine. We knew him better later as the Godfather. And Mabel pinned the Undertaker in a little more than 10 minutes. Those are your 8 tournament entrants. The rest of the card featured Bret Hart versus Jerry Lawler. Dan, you talked about that. You know, they could have gone that route in 94. They might not have known they were going to do that in 95.
This is a different time in terms of, I mean, this is not when Bret had the title, right? Am I mistaken? So it makes a little more sense to do it then. I mean, he was gonna be with Diesel the next year, and they were gonna be working on the world title level. So I understand him putting it off, but maybe at Lawler, maybe I'm overrating him. But the fact that he lost to Roddy Piper the year before, I mean, he can always get his heat back. He can talk, but just that was part of what I was saying.
Sure. We also had the main event, Diesel and Bam Bam Bigelow versus, God, I've quoted this 100 times before. Now I can't remember exactly how Ted DiBiase said it. He said, they're going to wrestle a tag team, and his name is Sid, a Native American Tatanka. A tag team, his name is Sid, and then pause, and then Native American Tatanka. And for completion's sake, let's look at some of the people who didn't qualify for the tournament as opposed to the ones who did. Adam Bomb, Jeff Jarrett, Duke the Dumpster Drozzy, King Kong Bundy, Mantar, Doink the Clown, Lex Luger, who was, you know, he was at the end of his run, unbeknownst to WWF, and Jacob Blue. Ugh. So we got people like Lex Luger, big star, not in the tournament. Jeff Jarrett, you know, upper mid-carder, not in the tournament. I can't really make much of a case for Adam Bomb or the Dumpster or Mantar or anything like that, but, I mean, I don't know. Dan, I'll ask you first, what is this? Is this like a testament to how thin the roster was at the time? Is it a testament to them trying to build new stars by way of having them established people?
You know, this was the one that Cactus Jack had some good promos at the expense of King Mabel. NEW not too long after this. I mean, yeah, this is Vince McMahon when in doubt to go with usually muscles, but I guess still they couldn't do that, so just raw size. And, you know, it was a thin roster, and I can see them wanting to elevate someone, but no, this was terrible. I mean, this was and this did bring the crowd up chanting ECW during the card, because this was at the peak of ECW or close to it. I mean, June of 95, this 95 was as good of a year of well-booked wrestling in ECW as you could find anywhere. And this was when I was in graduate school and watching it on a six-week delay on whatever channel they were showing it on in Columbia, Missouri, and it was, you know, the best thing I'd seen. And
This was the era of Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
It was pre-Jericho and pre-Mysterio, but my God, when you have the other three to choose from, and then homegrown stars like Sabu was in and out, Taz, he got
Raven.
Injured at some point during the year, but Taz, Raven, and Tommy Dreamer were in the midst of their feud.
Yep.
Sandman, of course, was
emerging at this point. I mean,
not much of a worker, especially compared to a Benoit or something like that. But yeah, I mean, as far as roster goes,
Public Enemy was there. I mean, I realize there wasn't the money there, but they had a roster. I was not watching much WWF at this time, and I was just waiting for channel whatever 11 or whatever. It wasn't on the cable. This channel was so lowbrow in Columbia that it was America 1 or something like that, and you'd have to take the cable box off and put on the rabbit ears, and then you could get this show, and they showed, you know, ECW. I think USWA was still in existence, Smoky Mountain, and all that stuff.
Wow.
And, this was a point in time where that was what I was spending most of my time watching, and certainly not this crap. I mean, this
would have been the time of, like, this USWA, this would have been, like, PG-13.
Yep.
Then
yep.
The Spellbinder and Reggie B. Fine, and I'm sure Coco Beware came back at some point. Good God.
And it was about, you know, but they'd probably let King Mabel go down there, too. I mean,
I'm sure, yeah. By the Harlem Knights.
Yeah.
Have Mo and Mabel go back down there.
But this was I don't know how much time we want to spend. I mean, this was awful. I there were things maybe they could have done, but this was as bad as WWF got. But to put, you know, Mabel, to think he was going to get out. I mean, the guy couldn't even move. He just, you know, I don't want to say too much because I don't have much to say.
Now, Dusty, I know you've got a lot of opinions on this pay-per-view, and really, I mean, we don't need to talk about it, like, topic by topic, because I think we can cover a lot of ground in just a couple of rants.
Yeah.
But you and I have talked about this, and we've probably even mentioned it on an audio before, but I think this is probably the best platform that it's going to be on record. It's specifically a King of the Ring audio. So talk to me about your opinions of the decisions that were made at this pay-per-view.
Well, first of all, I wanted to answer something. I remember from reading Wrestling Tribune that they were doing massive cuts at this time.
Mm.
So the roster was super thin. They were cutting everywhere. And I guess this was one of their worst financial times ever.
Mm.
And, this pay-per-view where you need eight guys, to show up and really be something, this pay-per-view really shines a highlight on the fact that they didn't have that,
yeah,
like, at all. As far as the decisions made, Eric Chmiel, the editor of Wrestling Tribune, and as far as I'm concerned, the number one guy for newsletters.
Mm-hmm.
I know everybody says Meltzer's better, but I could at least read Eric's sentences. Thank you. But he reported that they were going to do a surprise winner.
Uh-huh.
And the whole column speculating on what that meant, surprise winner. So he figured that meant either Mabel, comma, or Rhodey. Literally, they chose the worst possible one of the three.
Yes.
They chose Rhodey would have been good because he's obviously not on steroids and he's smaller and he can work. I mean, at that time, he was very different and showed some potential.
He was an untapped promo also at the time.
Untapped promo, absolutely. He probably would have cut an awesome I'm the King promo,
you know?
I would agree with that.
And Kama was a better choice because he's a big guy and he's muscular. And if you're looking for someone to face Diesel, he probably would have been the best choice as far as that goes. Feuding with The Undertaker at the time, if the brackets had gone different with him winning, he could have pinned Undertaker in the second round or something,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And that would have made him all the more credible.
That would have given him the boost, yeah. And not to interrupt.
He would have won over Michaels, Undertaker, and Savio in order to win the tournament. That would have been huge, you know?
And just to interject, too, the fact that he was the supreme fighting machine, they were pushing him as their ultimate fighter. I know Vince likes to say that UFC is not a competition to WWE, and I'm sure that thought process goes all the way back to the beginning of UFC. It might have made sense for them to push an ultimate fighter type of character as a number one contender for the world title. But
sure.
And not to continue to interrupt, but you're right. Mabel was probably the worst of those three choices, but he was the one that Vince looked at and saw the SummerSlam poster, Diesel versus Mabel. So,
yeah.
I mean, talk about that some.
Well, no, let me finish my other point here.
Okay, yep.
Like, Undertaker didn't need the win. Undertaker's a huge star. Shawn Michaels is already established. Yokozuna... it was already a world champion. They didn't need the win. Everybody says, oh, Shawn Michaels should have won that tournament. I don't know. What would he have gained, you know? But,
sure.
Like, Rhodey or Kama would have really gained something.
Mm-hmm.
And in retrospect, well, not even in retrospect, I thought this back in 95, you know, that would have been, more credible as winners and would have had better matches and whatever else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just, I don't want to stop Dusty's train of thought, but people think of Kama and they think of the Godfather, and, you know, he never had a big reputation for work rate, but he looked pretty badass at this point. And he could have been a lot more credible than Mabel.
Yes, I think so. Real quick, for both of you, why not Savio? Damn, start with you. Why not Savio?
They were giving him a decent push at this time. Again, probably a better choice than Mabel. He did some stuff later in Puerto Rico that was actually pretty decent. I saw some of those tapes at some point, but I always thought he was a little overrated in WWF. I was never a big fan. So you're not going to get me. I think Dusty brought up two better choices, in my opinion. Again, it's easy to say they should have signed somebody else, but, I mean, if you look at, the type of talent that they were promoting in ECW and in other parts of the country, they should have signed some other talent at this point. I mean, this was a bad roster.
What if they could have nabbed, and my God, would Philadelphia had shit on this had it happened? What if they would have gotten Terry Funk for one night? Somebody like that.
To do what? I mean, to have I don't think you can
probably
put him
just
in the ring.
I don't know. To have him win, two matches in the tournament and then lose to Mabel for legitimacy.
Yeah,
that's
it depends
losing.
On who's winning. If he's losing to the roadie, then that's
right.
Maybe not so bad. And they might have been able to do it. He wasn't as involved with ECW at this time. I mean, he'd done the three-way match with Shane and Sabu, but I don't think he was. And he came back to feud with Cactus Jack. That I don't have my whole ECW time frame perfect. If this is the exact time he was feuding with Cactus Jack, I want to say that started up.
It was a little later.
About that time. So, yeah, that would have pissed me off.
It was a little later because I think he came back at the Hostile City Showdown that year. I could be mistaken, actually. He came out in the box dressed as Sandman.
Yes, as Sandman. God, see, their shit was so good.
It was.
Oh,
that was
so
fantastic.
Good. And then the thing with Shane Douglas and Cactus Jack teaming up made sense. Anyway, we could do an ECW one sometime because that was my show. I mean, I don't have the expertise on some of these. I remember thinking this was a shit product, and then I saw Mabel one, and I was like, I'm not getting any of these pay-per-views.
Yeah. Dusty, and correct me if I'm wrong, but was Savio just kind of a proxy for Razor Ramon? He was like hurt or on cocaine or something like that. Like, there was a reason that he was sitting out this pay-per-view. He might have been on probation or suspension or something. Or it might have been hurt.
It was an injury. It was a rib injury, but I'm sure he was nose-deep in cocaine as well.
but I'm assuming that's why they tried to give him. I'm sorry, I was going to say that must have been why they gave Savio the little one-night story, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. It was the last-second thing. They were going to push him anyway. They had plans to kind of unveil him at the next TV tapings and make a big deal out of him. And I think what happened was it got elevated because of Razor being out. And the fans there didn't even, like, recognize the name. They thought it was, like, Savio Vega or something like that. To answer your question to Dan, maybe they should have signed Shane Douglas sooner.
Yep.
And had him win the tournament.
That was kind of what I was getting at, and I know that he didn't have the best run later, but he would have done. I mean, just exactly. That's, they talked to Sabu at that time. I mean, it just something. I don't know.
And
Shane
Douglas
probably makes more sense within the WWE framework at that point. But
right, and he's a guy who would have grabbed that opportunity and run with it. I mean,
he'd have given a great promo. He gave a hell of a promo when he won the NWA title.
Yeah, absolutely.
God. Amazing.
He's a guy who you could have, you could take a few other people like Sandman. I know he was a babyface, so that probably wouldn't have worked. It kind of goes back to that, like, only Ted DiBiase could have been the Million Dollar Man. Only Kurt Hennig could have been Mr. Perfect. Really, if you're looking up and down the ECW roster, there are a few people, and I would even say, like, ECW people. Now, I don't count Benoit. I know he got a tryout later on that, or at some point during 95. Really, Shane Douglas would have been the perfect choice to pick up, win the King of the Ring and main event SummerSlam. He would have talked his way into the main event and maybe even talked some people into buying the show.
Yeah, he was believable as saying he was the best out there. I mean, he was doing a great, and Paul Heyman knew he wasn't trying to push a lot of guys that WWE would necessarily, especially at this point before the Attitude Era, that they would want, because he knew they could get him. But, you know, Shane would have been a good choice here.
Yep. And he was a dean, which Dan, well, if he would have been director, a department director, or committee chair, then maybe he would have been on his side, right?
I'm sorry?
I'm just making reference to the fact that you're smarter than both of us put together.
Oh God! Well, I'm actually, I thought you knew. So I'm chairing a committee right now. Actually, taking up my whole week. But
see, you have groupies, and they're in the stunt granny crew. Okay. just so we can get out of this.
We signed Chris Benoit right around that time, and put him in the Million Dollar Corporation. The straw that broke it was they didn't want him to do any Japan appearances.
And of course he wanted to.
WCW, okay, yeah. So that was the deciding factor for him there. You know, plus they probably, I'm sure they offered him more money, and it was all guaranteed. So.
Oh, I'm sure.
How much, just as a reference, this was obviously... Okay, so we're in, I'm trying to keep my WWF, WCW timeline together, but this was 95.
Mm-hmm.
This is, Lex Luger was, how much longer till he shows up at Nitro?
3 months, August, no, 3 months, July, August, September.
That's what I would have guessed. Yeah, this was getting close to that point, yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, the tide was changing. The 95 was a weird year in pro wrestling. ECW was starting to hit its stride. WCW was trying to big things. They're trying to get over the fact that Hulk Hogan, get past the fact that Hulk Hogan was not over with their Southern crowd. And in the meantime, I think 95, it was either 95 or 96, but I'm pretty sure it was 95 that was the money-losing year for WWF.
Might be a good indicator why.
Yeah, with Titan was the Titanic, you know. I think that was the analogy that was being made. So 95, yeesh, kind of scary. Dusty, overall thoughts on the card? Thumbs up,
terrible.
Down in the middle?
Just absolutely terrible.
Yeah, Dan?
Yeah, this is terrible. I agree.
Okay.
I can't even say it's one of those that's so bad you got to see it. You don't have to see this. This was shit. outside of, you know, and even the Bret Hart Jerry Lawler match itself wasn't, you know, the build up was great and the match was okay, but it's not. That was what might have drawn some of the house was to see Bret Hart finally get Jerry Lawler get his comeuppance.
Okay. Oh, I was just gonna say that was the work rate oriented match of the entire show.
Nine minutes.
The fact that the two best workers on the show went 9 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have 7 more King of the Ring tournaments to go through. Can we plow through them all in pretty short order, do you think?
That's what I was just worried about, an hour and a half. It's whatever you guys want to do.
I think we're going to have to split this into 2 1-hour shows.
Okay.
Can I do something? Let's go out of turn.
Okay.
If you don't mind, and let's talk about 1999, because 1999 and 95 were the fucking worst ones ever, in my opinion.
Okay,
and,
I like this.
Mr.
F. The worst years for wrestling ever, too. Because WWF and WCW sucked both of those years, and ECW was good, but they weren't mainstream enough to overshadow it.
They're getting a TV. What am I trying to say? A national TV. They're getting national TV exposure via TNN. Later in the year, so that's to their advantage. But yeah, 99. You're right. Drawing wise, I don't know. It might have been okay for WCW, but man, they were really starting to tank with the booking. Nash was in charge most of the year. Yeah, Russo and Ferrara show up in late October.
Beginning of no logic whatsoever.
No, none. And, they did such a shitty job with WWF throughout the first part of 99.
But we can't take it seriously because everyone knows it's fake.
Oh,
fucking assholes. And everyone's got a belt, too, so that helps a lot. And the one guy who doesn't have a belt gets to be the king of the ring, even though he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Let's go through this. Let's see. ProWrestlingHistory.com even has the dark matches listed. And Jesus, just for the hell of it, let's go over these. Meat pinned Kurt Angle in the dark match of the show. Matt and Jeff Hardy went to a no contest over Edge and Christian in a minute and a half.
Yeah.
So, and they're in Greensboro, North Carolina, a place that probably appreciates decently long matches. I realize it's a pregame show, but Jesus Christ.
No, this Russo is clearly still in WWF at this point. Is that right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Shit, terrible.
Midian and Viscera beat the Big Boss Man in a minute 47. It's a handicap match, but he's still the Big Boss Man, whatever. Prince Albert beats Val Venus in 2 minutes. Ken Shamrock beats Shane McMahon in disqualification in 43 seconds.
Yeah.
These were some of the matches that were shown probably on Sunday Night Heat before the pay-per-view to try to draw more of an audience to the show.
Yeah,
all of them except the Meat match were Sunday Night Heat matches.
Yeah.
That's goddamn dumb and ridiculous.
And the Hardy Boys match was to determine the number one contenders. And it ends in a no contest.
Of course it ends in a no contest. Of course it does. Vince Russo, you've done it again.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see here. And actually, I don't know. I'm kind of looking at the qualifying matches that took place on television. Okay, good. Viscera didn't make it. That's fine. Jeff Jarrett didn't make it. Draws didn't. Test. Godfather. Oh, my God. China was involved with this. Al Snow. Yeah, but China.
No, and the China match is the only match they let go any length of time, I guess, because they didn't want to have her lose very quickly. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, and I don't know. Let's see. So I'm looking through this. So Matt and Jeff Hardy wrestle Edge and Christian in the pregame show. Then Matt and Jeff Hardy beat Edge and Christian later in the show.
Yeah.
Whatever. Your tournament match were... Fucking, I have nothing to say to that. That's stupid. X-Pac beats Bob Holly via disqualification. So they even have to fucking protect Bob Holly.
No one can do a clean job.
No.
I love it.
Of course not. Jesus. Kane pins the Big Show. Okay. Billy Gunn beats Ken Shamrock when the referee stops the match. So there's another... There's your... second match out of three on the proper pay-per-view with an overthought finish.
So now, if you're a Ken Shamrock fan, you think your guy got screwed. So now you go home unsatisfied.
Yeah.
This pay-per-view. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, the 13-minute five-star classic between Road Dogg and China. Fucking unbelievable. And then just to run through the rest of the tournament, Billy Gunn beats Kane. X-Pac beats Road Dogg. It's a big Degeneration X circle jerk. The finish of the finals of the tournament, Billy Gunn beats X-Pac in 5.5 minutes. The rest of the card, Undertaker beat The Rock in 20 minutes. I'm sure it was good, or at least somewhat entertaining, but I don't remember because it was so overshadowed by the rest of the shitty show.
Yep.
And then Shane and Vince McMahon beat Steve Austin. Steve Austin had a little bit of ownership of the company. This was the match that gave it all back to Shane and Vince. It was the ladder match where Austin almost had his hand on the briefcase and somebody raised it up in the air, and we still don't know who it was.
It was the guy who drove the white Bronco, right?
WCW.
Yeah.
That's right, yep. It was DDP's mysterious benefactor. Where do you even fucking start? Well, Dusty, you wanted to start. You wanted to talk about this show. I mean, what really more is there to say other than how terrible it was? This is at the end of, like, a real heyday, though. Why was 98? It wasn't the best year, but it was a good year for WWF booking-wise. You know, they made some good decisions. And then 99? What the fuck?
Let me tell you, 97 was good, too. Russo had some good ideas in 97. And 98, he did pretty good overall. He made some mistakes, but it was overall pretty good. 99, the wheels come completely off the fucking train. And it's a total disaster. He starts booking like a 5-year-old Asperger sufferer who got hit in the head with a fucking mallet or something, you know?
It's like he knew he had a playground and just wanted to see what, you know, what he could get away with.
I mean, as we come to find out, the next 10 years would be more of the same.
Yeah, but, yeah, that's sad.
So,
Dan, how into the product were you at this time? You already knew that in 95 WWF was putting on shit. What about 99?
No. I mean, I was very frustrated with pretty much. I was still watching ECW, even though it wasn't the best ECW stuff. I mean, I they kept trying to put Mr. Ass to make him the guy, and it never worked. And to answer Dusty's question or comment, I would guess that finally they had enough confidence in Vince Russo to let him go without as much of an editor, and you see what happened. Guy's a fucking idiot that doesn't know the first thing about how to book wrestling, and, you know, I'm not going to get sued or whatever, threatened like Jim Cornette did, but the guy doesn't deserve to make a living in this business, sport, whatever. And it just frustrates me for years, and it's why, you know, I got to find other forms of entertainment sometimes because his shit isn't worth watching. Nope. And terrible. Sorry. I get exhausted. I get headaches thinking about what this guy did. I can't remember most of this shit. It just runs together.
Yeah,
I can tell you what day Dusty Rhodes won the world title in 1981 and shit, but I can't remember any of the crap that he books.
Yep. I could tell you every champion, when they won, when they lost, who they lost to, every undercard match on every pay-per-view, up until Russo gets autonomy, and then it's just a fucking disaster.
Exactly.
It's true, because how many times did Road Dogg wrestle Billy Gunn on one pay-per-view and then team up with him the following pay-per-view, possibly to wrestle Kane versus or X-Pac versus somebody, and then just to have them all united the following pay-per-view, splintered the next time. In the meantime, Edge and Christian, no contest with the Hardy Boys. They like Draws and Albert. Oh, but Draws and Albert don't like each other. Or Kane and Big Show don't like each other, but they're the champions, but they didn't like each other from the first day they crossed paths. It's fucking impossible to keep track of. It's the worst schizophrenic booking ever.
It's just... You know, and that's the thing is, and Dusty's obviously the same way. I mean, you enjoyed following this. You enjoyed keeping up with it. And then it became gradually, you got to be like, why am I so confused? Then you became, this is painful to watch. I can't watch this shit.
Yep.
It's just too frustrating. And,
it's,
you know, that's
sure.
some degree where
it's
we are today.
It's sure to watch and...
Yep.
There's no enjoyment. It's just, it's not fun. And if wrestling's not fun, then you start thinking about, like, other things you shouldn't be thinking about. Like, why am I watching grown men pretend to beat each other up?
Right. Yeah.
And you shouldn't be thinking that when you're watching wrestling. You should just be having a good time.
And since no one reads my blog, but I posted a blog about Ben Askren on the Torch thing. And, I know that he's trying to be a bad guy. He's trying to be the next Josh Koscheck, and he understands it. But it's just like you see it in MMA because it's all a legitimate sporting event. But that's not the main thing. It's that all those people are themselves with the volume turned up a little bit, and they have a consistent moral compass or whatever you want to call it that they follow. And so you know who those people are, and you know Ben Askren's kind of cocky. Most people probably don't know who Ben Askren is listening to this, but he's a Missouri wrestler that's now doing very well in MMA. Yeah, he's cocky, but, you know, he's our guy that's cocky, and he's not a bad guy. He just kind of likes to piss people off a little bit to sell some tickets. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's a complete non sequitur, I know, but it's just, I can't talk much about Russo without anyone.
I'm getting angry.
Yeah, it's frustrating. More frustrating.
Any person who likes wrestling just automatically hates Vince Russo because Vince Russo doesn't promote wrestling.
That's right.
And has disdain for people that want to see a coherent product.
Yeah.
I want to mention one thing about Billy Gunn, and this is something that people bring up about him a lot. And Ed, as one of you two actually mentioned it earlier, the fact that he was the guy with the look, okay? I've heard it before. I'll hear it again, I'm sure. He was 6'4", 6'3", 4", whatever, 250, 260, blonde. Beyond that, though, honestly, if you took Billy Gunn, even from 1999, his King of the Ring tournament win that he would parlay into a match against The Rock at SummerSlam where he would be made a fool out of in a kiss-my-ass match in about 6 minutes, and it was a fucking complete afterthought, and most of that was probably Vince Russo's fault. If you take the people that they compare him to, you know, he had the look, supposedly. Well, here are some other people who had the look. Hulk Hogan, Lex Luger, they tried to plug him in. Sid.
Yep.
They thought they were going to put Sid in that spot. Now they've got Triple H, a bodybuilder who knows some moves and married the owner's daughter. Take those five, or however many I mentioned, Hogan, Sid, Luger, Warrior, throw Warrior in there, Hunter. Now put Billy Gunn in there. How fucking plain does that guy look compared to the rest of them? I don't see where the look comes into play with this guy. And his promos were shoddy at best. He was shaky, and when he'd yell and try to show some passion, he'd kind of just do this a lot.
Hey, Scoob!
Hey, Scoob! He was good for... he was good for one line throughout his entire Degeneration X run. I don't get it. This was a poor decision. I really don't know what more needs to be said about 1999 other than just asking thumbs up or down.
Yeah.
And it's obvious. Dusty?
Yeah, one quick thing. Everybody you compare Gunn to, he fails every test. Work rate, he's the worst.
He can't work.
To it. Because Warrior was the worst, but he's right there. Charisma?
No, because Warrior, you can name one good Ultimate Warrior match. I defy you to name one good Billy Gunn match.
There you go. Yep. Chris Benoit couldn't even get a good match out of him.
Chris Benoit could stick his arm up Billy Gunn's ass and use him as a puppet and still couldn't get a good match out of him.
Yep. But yeah, work rate, charisma, talking, he had nothing.
Yeah. Literally nothing to offer. So, the overall show, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Absolutely thumbs down.
Down, Dan?
Obviously thumbs down, and I would just add, because I was listening to the Bruce Mitchell show, and they were talking about Sid Vicious and all his limitations, and you nailed it. Sid Vicious is 10 times the draw that this piece is. I mean,
he's got the better look. He's got an interesting way of talking.
When you said Vicious, I mean, we went to some house shows, and I mean, I was younger, obviously, but we were like, you know, it's pretty cool to see Sid Vicious. I mean, this guy was just another whatever, Ken doll, I don't know.
Yeah, a monster. But Billy Gunn just a fucking show.